Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this episode of the Horsemanship Journey Podcast. I'm Shane Jacob, your host, and I thank you for taking your time to be with us today. Today, I'm excited to present Robert J. Hunt. Robert is the accountability guy, and he's also the co-author of the book, Nobody Cares Until You Do. He's a business owner. He helps leaders remove the things that keep them from being their best. He's also an executive coach who runs CEO peer groups. He's been married 25 years to his wife, Kathy, and has two children. He's passionate about his faith, his purpose, his family, and his quest to help people be their best. Robert, thank you so much for taking your time to be with us today.
Thank you, Shane, for having me on your program.
Right on. Well, tell us a little bit more about you. That's kind of short. Tell us your story, where you came from, and how you got to be doing what you got going on today.
I grew up in Southern California, moved to Texas 14 years ago. And my whole quest has been in trying to live my life effectively as best I could without having a lot of guidance. My parents were divorced when I was a freshman, and we had kind of a rough childhood. So I think I had to learn the hard way pretty much everything I've learned in life. And I think I missed a lot of opportunities because of a lack of vision and purpose in my life when I was young. I was quite lazy. I watched an awful lot of television, didn't seem to care much about anything, just did the very least I had to do to get by. And as I got out into my career and life in general, I realized that doesn't cut it. And I had to learn the hard way that people are expecting me to show up and do something and do what was expected of me, but to give me the opportunity to be awesome if I really wanted it. And I had to learn what that looked like and how to own that. And that's where accountability was the core of what really drove those decisions over the years.
Yeah. Tell us about that. How did you get to be the accountability guy?
I think someone has to be the accountability guy. Someone has to own it. We don't really do accountability in our world very well. I think everybody would say, I'm very accountable. I have a job, I have a house. And those are actually responsible. Those are things you do just because you're supposed to. That's the bare minimum in life, that showing up is often all you're expected to do. But when it really comes down to the idea of what a great life could be like, a great marriage, a great job, a great company, that's where accountability is the differentiator. And so as I've seen so many people not do accountability well over the years, and even my beautiful wife, Kathy, and I, we made really bad decisions in our journey all leading up to 2019, where we really had to realize we need to take ownership for our life and stop blaming God and the world and everybody else for our problems. We need to own it. And we did. And that was a huge turning point for us in our marriage, in our finances, in my business, everything, when I realized the difference between just showing up and owning it. And so I'm the accountability guy because I want everyone to understand the freedom and power that is found in having a life that is truly accountable.
Amen to that. Right on. So one of our four core principles in the Stable Living program that we use is personal responsibility. We call it our personal horsepower. So this is a big subject for us. And you know, it is a big subject. I've been into ownership and responsibility. It seems like I've tried to be aware of it for a long period of time. And then a year or two ago, I ran across a guy giving a speech or a book. And he said, well, here's, 16 facets of, things that I hadn't even thought of that are related to this subject that are tied to our results. So tell us about what does it mean to be accountable in life?
You know, in the simplest terms, accountability means you own it. And what happens in life is when we realize that there's more to just showing up and that the world expects us to own it, the first thing we do is we try and get out of it. And we don't really notice that because that's just the way the world normally works. But in the simplest term, if you were alone and there was no one else to do it, you'd figure out it's yours. But because we live in community and we've grown to be expecting that if I don't do it, the government will provide. If I don't do it, someone at my church will step up. If I don't do it, then my spouse will cover this. And as we continue to live this life where we just weasel out of things, we're actually putting ourselves in a victim mode. And I don't think anybody wants to be a victim, but in the way that you handle it, you put yourself in a victim mode. And when you do that, life is miserable because everything happens to you and nothing happens because of you. And so it's very much like I'm stuck and everything's bad. And those are people, you know, they just are angry at the world. They're constantly complaining about something. Nothing ever seems to go right for them. Well, a lot of that is because how they look at the response to the world that comes to you. We always say life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you respond to it. And I grew up having to make a choice as I got older. I didn't have a dad who ever was involved in my life in a good way. And we were very poor, and I grew up and I got married and I got divorced and everything fell apart and I went through a bankruptcy and I could be bitter the rest of my life. But there comes a point in your life when you really step back and you go, wait, nobody cares. Nobody cares if I'm broke, fat, miserable, in a horrible marriage, running a crappy business with horrible kids. Nobody cares unless I do. And when I care enough to do something about it, I actually start the journey towards accountability where I can have the life that I really want. And I am focused on doing that because I've made a decision to own it.
Right on. Do you think that you touched on this, but do you think that we're just not accountability? You say you're accountable. You said that, you know, it's not a big thing in our world. Do you think that the reason that people and that we're not really aware of it? I mean, we haven't been taught to take ownership and we don't like it. It's not necessary to survive in this world. Is that what you think?
Well, certainly the world has created a lot of outs. You know, at school, we start with our kids when they're young. When they're very young, we say, put away your toys, eat your dinner. It's time to go to bed. We tell them what to do. And we show them that if they obey that, then life is good. And if they don't obey, we spank them or we put them in timeout or we take away a toy. There's some responsibility. There's some action there. But as you get older and you get more freedom, you figure out very quickly, you can weasel out of a lot of stuff. You can come home and tell your parents, my teacher's a jerk. He doesn't communicate well. I have this boss. They're horrible. I have this neighbor. He's a jerk. And we can have all these reasons and excuses to why life isn't going the way we want it. And the whole world goes, yeah, you're right. That's horrible. That's frustrating. And if you got a buddy who's got a horrible marriage, it's rare that people go, dude, that's because you're a jerk. They go, yeah, your spouse is a jerk. You know, they're very quickly to play along with whatever you say. And all that does is keep us as a victim and make us helpless. And so I think that's kind of the way our world is these days. Look at all the angry people pointing at fingers that, did you vote for Trump? Did you not vote for Trump? Do you wear a mask? Do you not wear a mask? You know, whatever side you're on, I hate you. And we've become to this place where all we're doing is being angry at everybody and nobody's showing up and owning it. And we used to turn to the church and we used to turn to friends, but they're not there for us anymore. They can't make us behave anyway. So at some point, you have to own your own junk. And that's what accountability is.
Right on. So it sounds like there's benefits. But before you tell us all the benefits about being accountable, what's the steps? So how do you go about making a change? If you can recognize that, you know, maybe I can recognize that I'm blaming or making excuses, or I can see that I'm not fully taking responsibility and being accountable. How do you go about getting it done?
Yeah, we outline this in our book, Nobody Cares Until You Do. And the book is really telling all the stories of the things that we went through that helped us learn this and to model it in our lives. But we say that when someone realizes that they're accountable, the first thing you do is blame. And blame doesn't really fix anything. It just makes us mad. Now I'm mad at the government. I'm mad at my teachers. I'm mad at God. I'm mad at everybody. And nothing is getting any better. I'm just mad. If that doesn't work, then we make excuses. We make excuses for the journey we've had. And we make excuses for why we didn't do something because we didn't know or it wasn't fair. And all these little excuses, all they do is just take away the initiative to do anything about it because we have some excuse. You're late for this meeting. Yeah, the traffic was really bad. I mean, in the simplest things, we just quick to make an excuse. And so if blame and excuse doesn't work, then we just say, well, I can't. I can't do that. That's too hard. That's too awkward. That's too uncomfortable. That's outside my comfort zone, which is another word for fear. And so we just say we can't. But what we really mean is I won't. And if we had to actually say, no, I don't want to do that, I won't do that. Then people look at us like we're being stubborn or foolish. But when we say we can't, they go, oh yeah, yeah, that's hard for you. I can see why you can't. And again, it gives us the out to not own it. And if all those three things don't work, then we just wait and hope. And that's where my beautiful wife and I were in 2019. We owed $90,000 in credit card debt. That doesn't count the house or the cars. And we were miserable. And it was affecting the way we looked at the world. We were blaming God. We were blaming each other. We were angry at the business. We were angry at the economy. And it wasn't till September 2019 when we finally said, stop it. Nobody cares if we're miserable in our lives unless we care enough to do something about it. And so we did. We put our house up on the market and we decided to sell it. We had a very lovely home here in North Texas. And we ended up selling the house, taking all the money and the equity of it, and paying off all our debt and downsizing to this rental that we live in now, this lovely little home. And we started over. And so by March of 2020, we had paid off all of our debt and we were on a new journey. And the freedom that we had at that moment and the peace that we had at that moment was remarkable. But it wasn't until we owned it that we saw the power of accountability. Yeah. And then once you decide all those things, you're aware of it and you realize that it's yours to own, then it's easy. Acknowledge the reality of where you are, embrace the suck. It's going to suck because life is a challenge either way, but I'd rather have a challenging journey fixing my problems than a challenging journey staying as a victim. So embrace the suck, find a solution and make it happen. And those solutions, they appear almost magically when your head is free from all the junk that holds us back and confuses us. When you can actually get clarity and when you're confident because you've kicked something's butt and you're willing to go out and try, now I'll go to marriage counseling, now I'll lose weight, now I'll work on my faith. All these things that you were angry and didn't want to work on, now you've have the taste in your mouth of that success and it fuels more and more accountability in your life.
Yeah, right on. And there's more benefits. If I'm not totally sold on this idea of, because it sounds kind of hard. What's to gain? I mean, you've talked about it, but I'm just saying, is there anything else to gain here? What's the benefits?
Yeah, totally. Sure. I think that the best core benefit I could ever mention is freedom, because when you are a prisoner to your circumstances, it's miserable and you can't go do anything and you have no hope and you have no future. But when you realize that you have the power to change everything because you own everything. We say in the book, when you take accountability for everything in your life, you have the opportunity to change anything in your life. So if you're not happy with your marriage, if you're not happy with your relationships or your weight or your finances or your business, whatever it is, that's why in the book, we put these satisfaction assessments where we ask people, fill out here honestly, how satisfied are you in your life? And if you say, I'm not happy in this area, then the question is, okay, what are you going to do about it? And we want you to be honest in that area, because if you're not honest, you're just lying to yourself. You're not going to do anything about it. But if you really are honest and you say, I don't like this, great. Now, what are you going to do about it? Don't blame. Don't make excuses. Don't say I can't and don't wait and hope. You own it and you say, okay, what am I going to do here? And I'm telling you that the joy and the peace that you have in your life when you truly own it is incredible. I own every bit of my life. I don't control it all. There's an awful lot that happens to me that I have to constantly deal with. I didn't plan COVID. I didn't plan for people to quit their jobs. I didn't plan for things to happen, but I can respond to it and own it. And when I do that, I still remain powerful and in charge of everything that's going on in my world.
Right on, right on. That is empowering. Robert, that, you know, a lot of us, you know, we can see that, and then, but it seems like this is a learned thing. And because it doesn't seem like you automatically come as your default, I think our default is just to make excuses, because it appears to be easier to have a way out of the accountability. But how do we get our children? How do we get our employees to, you know, who are constantly coming up with excuses? How do we help them understand this and to be accountable themselves?
Yeah, whether it's your children or your employees, the same rule applies. Nobody can hold anyone accountable. All you can do is try and create a world where they want to be accountable. Because if you say, I'm going to hold you accountable for this, and they don't do it, what are you going to do, fire them? They're your kids. You're stuck with them. And so you have to think about, well, so am I going to take away all their privileges and punish them constantly? At some point, they got to own it. And then when they get older and they're old enough to move away from you, all they've done is left you. They're still not accountable. So what you want to do is help them by the example you set and how you own it, to see the power and freedom and joy that is held with a life that is accountable. And if your children watch you and if your employees watch you and they look at you rocking it because you own it, not that everything's perfect and not that everything's easy and not that everything goes the way we planned it to go, but that whatever comes our way, we're going to own it. And we're going to also acknowledge that all of our actions have consequences. Today's world, you can do whatever you want to do and it seems you can get away with it. You can go on social media and just light someone up and say all these horrible things and get away with it. Because, you know, maybe they don't come over to your house and punch you in the face. Or if they do, you can say, oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't know. And we just lived in a world where our words don't matter anymore. And so if we're going to really teach our kids or our employees that there's a level of accountability, we have to model it. But it's so powerful and it's so freeing. And when you're truly accountable, life is way better. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's freedom. It's peace. It's power. And if you can own it and you can model it, other people will follow you. They'll want to be like that.
Right on. Model it. Perfect. So you deal a lot. You're involved with business leaders, with thought leaders. You have these CEO peer groups. Tell us a little bit about that. And tell us about the people that are in these groups with you and how they go about life, the traits of the leaders, if you will.
Yeah, a lot of the book came from all these years of being in peer groups, leading peer groups. I bring business owners and CEOs together every month, and we create the opportunity for accountability. Nobody can hold anyone accountable. So when some CEO is in a room with another CEO and they say, I'm having this cash flow issue and I'm looking at this issue, they don't tell them what to do and they don't make sure they're doing it. They share what they've done so the other person can see an example. Like I was just saying before, we model the behavior. And being in a group like that where people are being open and transparent, vulnerability is what's required for true accountability. You have to be willing to be honest and say, I don't know what I'm doing here. I have all these problems. How can a CEO ever know everything? The world is constantly changing. If you're a business owner and you've got dozens of employees, every year there's a new tax law, there's a new HR law, there's a new cybersecurity threat. There's all these problems to do with banking regulations. You have to know everything and whatever you are doing for a living. You know, whatever you did on top of that as the normal thing you did to make money, you got to know all this stuff and you have to be so smart. It's exhausting. So having these CEOs in these groups gives them a place to get encouragement and support and help and wisdom, and accountability is afforded to them in those groups if they want it. If they're radically transparent and open with each other, then they can say, hey, I got a problem and here's what I'm working on. And everyone can share and help them, but they still own it. It's still their journey. We're just there to support them in the process.
Right on. In dealing with a lot of us, you know, when we look to business leaders and these CEOs, what are some other traits that they have that have put them on the top of their game?
Yeah, I would say for the CEOs that I work with, there's a common thread of five things. There's a lot, but the top five that I've narrowed down is great CEOs are always learning. Like I just mentioned, the world's constantly changing. If you're not keeping up with what's going on somehow, then you're falling behind. And you don't have to know everything. That's why you hire employees and let them do the work that they're supposed to do. But you got to know whether or not they're snowing you. Because if they're just coming in and telling you nonsense, you got to go, wait, that's not right. So you have to know, you have to constantly be learning just to keep up with it. They learn, they're constantly learning. They're always making decisions. And these leaders don't always make the perfect decision, but they do make the decision. That is one of the responsibilities you have to do, is you make the decisions, the hard decisions, especially. And then the third thing is they own it. When they make a decision, it's their decision. So they own it. They take accountability. They don't pass the buck. And because they own it, they have the power to change it if it doesn't work. And a lot of times it doesn't work. We learn by experiences. Sometimes we make a decision and with the limited amount of information we had, we thought, this is what I know. Here's my decision. It didn't work. Okay, here's a different decision. I mean, you got to do that. It's just part of life. You're never going to know it all. The fourth thing that great CEOs do is they're constantly pouring into others. When I meet a business owner who is the busiest employee in the company, man, they're capped. That's the bottle's neck. That they're only going to get as much done as can pass through their hands. And they're holding the company back. And there's no future. If they have a heart attack and die, the company's screwed and all these people lose their jobs. So you've got to constantly step back from your business, the working of your business, enough to look around and go, she's really struggling. I need to pour into her. And he's really having a hard time here. I need to help him. And you pour into other people so they do their job better. So you don't do the work. They do the work. And you help them do it better by nurturing, encouraging, and challenging them. And then the fifth thing is CEOs, they drive results. They're not doing the work. They're not achieving the results. They're driving the results by pouring into their team, by creating strategies and plans. And if you step back from your business far enough to not be in the weeds constantly, you can look around at the horizon and go, we need to go there next. And you drive the team towards where you see we're going for the vision you've created. But you can never get to that vision if you're so busy doing all the work. If you really want to create a company that can scale and sustain, you've got to get out of being the busiest employee on the team. Step back enough, pour into your team, and let them get the work done while you drive the results by encouraging and challenging them along the way.
That is, that's great advice. Those are good observations. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about this decision-making, because the things that you just said right there, the five traits of CEOs, those are things that we can all do in our, you know, just to get cooperations in our homes, in our or people we work with or whatever. But as far as making the decisions, it seems like that just making the decision a lot of time is what holds us back. I mean, why do you think that we don't just go ahead and do it? And those people that you see that you observed, they seem to make decisions pretty hastily.
Well, they make them timely. They make them with confidence, but they don't know if it's going to work. I mean, they don't. I guarantee you everybody in February of 2020 had a plan for what the year was going to look like. I know so many people who just started a business the month the world shut down. There's so many variables that are outside our control. And the reality is most things are out of our control. More things are out of our control than we really recognize. And what causes leaders stress is they have to control everything. You can't control most things. And so the reality is that you have to make the best decision you can in a timely manner. And as long as you have a vision of where you're going and you're willing to take a risk, you'll make good decisions most of the time. But they make a lot of bad decisions. They'll tell you in our group, they admit, I blew it. And I have one client who's told of all the millions of dollars in our group meetings he's shared, all the millions of dollars he's lost because of bad decisions he's made. And he talks about it to tell us to encourage people to take a risk, because he's also made a lot of millions by being successful in the other decisions. You know, what's a batting average of a great baseball player? Like 300 something, right? So if you're batting 300, you're a hero. That means 70% of the time you struck out. And so we forget that you're going to strike out. Don't be afraid to take a risk. Successful leaders are confident enough to take the risk and then own it when it doesn't work out, because we'll come up with a better plan.
Awesome. Right on. Right on. The last thing, that trait that you mentioned there kind of the vision and guiding the vision. And even when we look at that from an individual perspective, I was wondering if you could just comment on defining our purpose for ourselves and also defining purpose for the people that we lead. How do we go about defining our purpose in life?
I think the number one responsibility of a CEO or business owner is to create a clear and compelling vision that the rest of the team will get excited about. Maslow's pyramid of the hierarchy of needs talks about at the very bottom, we need food and shelter. And then as we move up, we need affirmation and we need something that's positive contribution to our psyche. But at the top, it's self-actualization. And we want people who will stay with our company because they feel like they're needed, they're important, they're fulfilled through our work. And so you have to create this opportunity, this environment where people will self-actualize in the company. And it really comes down to because of your vision, that you've created a place where people want to be doing some kind of work that they would want to be doing with people they want to do it with. And if you don't have at least two of those, you're going to always spend all your time paying more money for people to get them to stay, and you're going to constantly have a lot of turnover. So if you don't know the vision for why the heck you're even there, how are the employees going to get excited about the job they have? I can go make money over here. I could do this. There's always another job that will pay more, usually. And so it really comes down to you owning some kind of exciting vision for your life, and that comes from your purpose. My purpose in life, at the core of it, is to honor God through the life that He's given me and the blessings He's poured out to me. Second to that is my personal purpose, where I help people remove the obstacles that keep them from being their best. Level below that is the day-to-day activities of loving my wife and serving her and raising my kids and being a good neighbor and a friend, and then the work I do. Those are the opportunities that drive my behavior, but it really starts with the very first purpose of my life, which is honoring God through the things that I do. You have to find your own purpose. There's a great book out there called Dare to Serve Leadership. It's written by Cheryl Batchelder. She was the CEO for Popeye's Chicken. It turned that company around, did a phenomenal job because she practiced the principles of servant leadership. And in the back of her book, she outlines how to define your personal purpose in life. It's a combination of the journey you've been on, the values that you have, the skills that you have, your strengths through StrengthFinder survey and other knowledge-based surveys, and then the journey that you're on and where you're going through your life. And so all those things combined, you'll find your purpose. That's how I created mine, was applying the principles that are found in her book. Whatever way you go about doing it, you need to know why on earth you're here and what's going to get your butt out of bed every day. And if you're not excited about it, don't count on your employees to be excited about it.
Yeah, that's great. That's true. It's true. Robert, just wondering, I don't know if you want to leave us a little bit more about your book, or what would you like to leave us with? Last thoughts for the horsemanship journey today.
You know, I think I wasted a lot of years in my life telling myself I couldn't do something. And I think a lot of people, after COVID and all the beatdown that we've had for the last few years, they've kind of resolved that they're not going to be able to live the life they really want. They're just trying to optimize the crappy one they ended up with. I don't believe that's really living. I certainly think that we've been blessed to be in America. And right now, if you're watching this podcast, you're richer than most of the people on the face of the planet. You probably have some really high-tech computer in your pocket and the ability to stop and watch a video, whereas most of the people out there are going to just look for food and a safe place to sleep. So we're very blessed. And I think we need to own that. We need to look at the things that we've been blessed with and be fired up to do something with it. So you have the opportunity, you have the ability to live the life you really want. Take the satisfaction assessment. You can go to my website. You don't have to give me your information at all. Nobodycaresbook.com. And take the satisfaction assessment online and be honest with yourself. Am I living the life I really want? The marriage, the relationship with God and friends, my finances, my health. Am I really living the life I want? And as you score that, then step back and go, okay, I'm not in these areas. Now what are you going to do about it? And know that you have the ability to pursue that. You have the ability to pursue the life you really want. Even if it's been a beatdown, there is still hope if you own it. And so I just want to encourage people, don't give up. Don't live a mediocre life. Live one that is full of purpose, where you're having joy and value of everything you're chasing, because it's way better when you own it.
Right on. One more time there, how do people reach you and find out more about you?
Yeah, you can go to our website, nobodycaresbook.com, and you can buy the book there. You can talk to me, you can send me a message on there. I'd love to hear from people if they've heard this message. I've also created a unique website landing page, nobodycarespod.com, for podcast, P-O-D. And if you go there, there's a contact form. And if you'll fill out the contact form with the code word horseman, I will mail you a copy of my book for free. As long as you will read it and you really want it, then I would be glad to give you a copy of our book to the first two people who fill out that form and send it to me. I'll mail you a copy of the book at no cost.
Right on. That's a great offer. Ready, go, guys. Get your free copy. Robert, thank you so much for taking your time to be with us today. We appreciate your time and your thoughts and your advice and your wisdom. We wish you continued success.
Thank you so much, Shane. This was a great, great, great show.